back to His Time on Worldwide KFUO. I am your host, Pastor Jonathan Fisk, and for these last few minutes here this morning, we're going to be doing a little worldview watch, as is our one, training our mind to understand the times, to take our Christian faith out into the world and discern what we see. Today, our guest, Professor Nathan Jastrom of Concordia University in Wisconsin, now I want to call it Mequon in Wisconsin, professor of theology with a specialization in Old Testament, but also a man who knows his archaeology. We're going to be talking with him about a recent find in the caves in which and around which they found the Dead Sea Scrolls, which are an older find. It's made the news now and again for some time, but now we found some new pieces of paper there, some new fragments, talking about what that means and maybe a few other things in the news. Dr. Jastrom, welcome to the show.
It's great to be with you.
So let's just start with the recent find, and maybe you can weave into that, you know, what the history of these caves are, these Dead Sea Scrolls are, but what happened recently?
Great. In February of this year, an announcement was made that a new find had been made around Qumran, where the earlier scrolls were found. And there was quite some initial excitement there because they talked about finding a new scroll, or that it was a new scroll cave. As you look at the evidence of what they actually found, they found remnants from very early flint tools, arrowheads, but they also found those characteristic storage jars where some of the Dead Sea Scrolls had been preserved in other caves in that area. So they were very excited, and they even found what looked like a scroll fragment, a piece of parchment that was rolled up. So there was high excitement there. When they examined that parchment a little more closely, they found that there was no writing on it. So it's a little bit of a misnomer to say that it's a Dead Sea Scroll if it's simply a fragment there. But it's still very exciting. One thing it helps prove is that these scrolls that we found in other caves were really produced at that site, at Qumran. This is a piece of parchment that was being prepared for writing. It didn't yet have writing on it, but it's one further piece of evidence that the people who lived in Qumran were actually producing at least some of the scrolls that were found at Qumran.
As opposed to just storing things there. So let's just make sure everybody knows then what that means. What was Qumran? What does it mean to say the Dead Sea Scrolls? It sounds so exotic, right? What are these writings that were found, what, the 40s?
Yes, from 1947 to 1956. They really are exotic. They're the oldest copies of the Bible that we have ever discovered. And I was privileged to work directly with the fragments from the Book of Numbers from Cave 4. And that was my doctoral dissertation when I was working on that. So I've been in the area, I've been in the caves, I've been in the museums working with these fragments. What they do is they show us the state of the Bible from even up to 250 years before Jesus was even born. And then some of the scrolls were produced after his birth up until the destruction of Jerusalem in 68-70 A.D., so they're very, very old fragments, many of them, about 220 of them, copies of biblical books, but a large number of them, even more, old works that we had never seen before, about 650 or so copies of non-biblical books, talking about what the people at that time believed, the way they sang their hymns, the rules that they had for their community, commentaries on the Bible. Just all sorts of wonderful information that we can get about people living before and during the time of Jesus.
Now, you mentioned it shows the state of the Bible up to 250 years before Jesus. And so maybe just a nice piece of information to throw in there that the Old Testament that we've been working with in Hebrew dates as a copy to about sometime in the 800s to a group of monastic Jews called the Masoretes, and that's what we've been working with. And this just leapfrogs way back over them and even over the New Testament. The irony that the New Testament documents were older as documents than the Old Testament now is no longer entirely true.
That's right. So it's just a great find. People used to think that the difference in The Greek and the Hebrew documents might have been simply because of translation, but now we're actually finding some Hebrew documents that have some of those different readings that the Greek documents had. And they aren't major differences. They aren't differences that would change a doctrine, but they are differences that help us get to an earlier state of the text to be even more precise and accurate with our translations of the Bible today.
Well, this is something that causes other people trouble in that you also have a Greek version of the Old Testament, which is as a document older than the Masoretic text from the 850s, and that's the text that's often quoted in the New Testament. And sometimes you'll find then that as it's quoting the Greek version, the word doesn't quite line up, at least as it translates into English, with the Hebrew version. And so you can have this verse you're supposed to go look up in the Old Testament that Peter's quoting, and you find it says something different. And then you run into an atheist out there who says, see, there's an error in the Bible. They didn't even know what they were doing. And it's not quite so easy as that.
It certainly isn't. As I was working with the Book of Numbers, I was privileged to work with one of the copies that was the most different from anything we had seen before. It had literally thousands of variations, some of them very small, some of them larger. But even the larger ones were larger in the sense that they would simply explain the text or bring in a comment that had been made in a different part of the Old Testament, in the book of Deuteronomy, back into the book of Numbers. So it was, at the one time, you could say it was very different in terms of the actual letters being written down. But in another sense, it was extremely similar in that the same items were being talked about. Very easy to tell which items had been expanded a little bit to help explain them. But the main result of looking at that text and comparing it to what we've known all along is that God has preserved the text of his word extremely carefully, that we can rely on the word that we're reading today in our English translations as being an accurate representation of what God actually said through his prophets of old.
You kind of just answered my next question, but I'm going to ask it anyway because I think it's worth repeating. So what does this do to the doctrine of scriptural inerrancy?
Well, that doctrine stands regardless of the differences that we've had in our copies. We've known all along that even some Hebrew copies had readings that were a little bit different from each other. But there have been studies that have compared all the manuscripts that are known in the world and showing, you know, thousands of little differences of spelling, or sometimes the word "and" is left out. You know, sometimes the scribe's eye would jump over. So our doctrine of inerrancy never was intended to say that every scribe who has ever copied the Bible by hand has copied it perfectly without any error. That's not what the doctrine is. The doctrine simply talks about what God inspired his prophets to write in the first place. And so as we use our scribal, the copies that we have today, we can get closer and closer to that the precise wording that God used with his prophets. And it just increases the authenticity and accuracy of the text that we have today.
Well, something you said far earlier, too, the discrepancies in spelling and even the bigger differences you might see, maybe an entire word changing, or let's just say John chapter 8, there's a chunk that maybe is inserted in the middle. None of these are big enough to undo the central doctrines of Christianity. Nothing really overturns what Christianity teaches.
That's right. And furthermore, we've never found documents that show that the destructive criticism that the Bible has endured has any evidence to its support. The idea that these books of the Old Testament were written hundreds of years after the events and by people who were unrelated to the original prophet, and then that they were later combined into some unified document with a false name ascribed to it. Those destructive sorts of theories have not one shred of evidence to support them from these earliest finds. Everything that we have, every piece of evidence that we have, simply supports the fact that these books were written as they are presented in our modern translations by one person, and they were held together as one document.
Now, we've got about 4 minutes left here. You mentioned there's a few other finds you'd like to talk about this morning?
Yes, there are another couple of finds that have been rather remarkable in the last couple of years. In 2015, a scroll that was discovered a little bit south of Qumran, still in the Dead Sea area, a place called En Gedi. They had a scroll there of Leviticus, but it was unopened, and it was burnt to a charcoal crisp. And so there's no way they could open it and read the writing inside. But then they discovered that they could use a CT scanning of that scroll, and they could mark where the ink was on the layers, and then they could kind of figure out how the layers curved around. So they got a topographical analysis, they got an ink analysis, and they joined those two together, and then they virtually unrolled that scroll with computers just based on all the data that the CT scan had given them. And they were able to come up with a scroll that's very readable. I looked at the document that came out, and I could read the letters without any difficulty. And this is from a scroll that comes from the latter part of the Dead Sea Scroll era, you know, in the 100s, maybe 200s AD. And now we have another piece of evidence from a scroll that was burnt to a crisp using this new CT scanning technology. So that was very exciting.
I remember watching a video on that a few months ago, and it was just unbelievable the way that could shoot. I don't even know what they're shooting in a CT scan through this burnt paper and see the difference between the paper and the ink still there, rolled up, and then like use magic of computers. I don't know what else to call it. The magic box to just open it up, and there it all was. Unbelievable what science achieved with that.
This is science in service of theology, where incredibly complex algorithms were used to put all that data together. So that was really exciting. And then another discovery that was made just last year in 2016, they found some new fragments with writing on them from a cave that was in the Dead Sea area, a place that's not at Qumran, but a little bit further south again, Nahal Se'ilim. And they found two papyrus fragments there with writing, probably from the Bar Kokhba period, that's in the 100s AD, so a little bit after the main finds at Qumran. And the fragments haven't yet been published with the writing on it, so we don't know what it says, but they're probably letters from that era. So it's just remarkable that they're continuing to find some fragments in that Dead Sea area that expand our knowledge of that time and of Scripture itself.
With just about a minute left, maybe just talk in general about the service archaeology has to offer to Christianity.
Well, Christianity is a religion that's based on real events in human history. So when we dig through stones and find documents or find artifacts that remain from biblical time, it's just very exciting to see that the Bible is not a philosophical treatise that somebody composed because he was feeling especially illuminated on that day. But it's talking about a real God who became a real man and went into real cities and performed real deeds. For instance, with Hezekiah's tunnel that's described in the Bible, archaeologists found that tunnel that brought water from a spring into Jerusalem. They found an inscription that was made by the workers on that tunnel. So now we have the Bible saying Hezekiah built the tunnel, and then we have the tunnel itself and the inscription from the time of Hezekiah in 701 BC telling us that Hezekiah really did build this tunnel. So it's just fascinating.
My guest, Dr. Nathan Jastrom, professor of theology at Concordia University in Wisconsin. Thank you for being with us today, Dr. Jastrom.
It's been a pleasure.
There's no mistake about it. Christianity is real. It's not just an idea. It's history. It's true. And in a dark and chaotic time like the one in which we live, isn't it nice to know that you believe in more than just a bunch of ideas? That you believe in the real facts of the universe, which include this real man, Jesus, with real blood inherited from real people that he shed for all people to make all people into his family, to undo that original sin and bring us back to God. What a wonderful thing to know is fact and not just idea. You're listening to His Time on Worldwide KFUO.